Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Remember, we are also live on Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to share the audio plus your comments and feedback on the stories we will be airing.
That's right indeed, Zipporah. On the program today, renewed fighting between armed groups in the troubled Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo forces thousands of Congolese to flee into neighboring Burundi.
The Burundians help us. They bring us sweet potato and corn to eat. It's definitely better here than on the other side of the lake. I'm very grateful for the hospitality.
Trade officials from Kenya and Tanzania meet in the coastal town of Mombasa to iron out their differences and boost trade between the two East African economic powerhouses.
We are living here very happy, very united. I just want to tell the rest of people that the relationship between Tanzania and Kenya is excellent. Although we have seen that in the last 3 years, we have seen the total trade shrinking a bit.
We'll bring you some of the comments that you've been writing about this particular dispute between Kenya and Tanzania. But first, let's have a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Police arrived in the northern French port city of Calais on Friday after a massive brawl between more than 100 Eritrean and Afghan migrants left at least 22 people injured. At least 5 migrants suffered serious gunshot wounds during the brawl. French Interior Minister Gérard Collomb blamed the clashes on gangs and human traffickers.
There may have been some premeditated events in the past, but now we see very well that there are gang leaders who gather others around them, and these are the networks we need to dismantle. Yesterday, the head of the Border Police Force told me that since January 1st, they had disbanded 6 smuggling networks.
In Kenya, a protest erupted in the capital, Nairobi, after an opposition member was arrested for participating in a mock ceremony earlier this week that swore an opposition leader, Raila Odinga. Demonstrators burned tires and called for his release and for Kenya's main television channels to be allowed back on air. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokesperson Rupert Colville voiced concern with the government's media crackdown.
We're concerned that 3 television stations remain suspended for the third day in Kenya after the government accused them of, quote, complicity for airing footage of the opposition leader Raila Odinga's self-proclaimed inauguration ceremony. We call on the government to respect and implement the judicial decision.
At least 90 migrants were feared drowned on Friday after a boat capsized in the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Libya. A spokesperson for the UN International Organization for Migration reported 2 Libyans among the number of dead, saying they could have been smugglers. Around 16,000 people have died trying to cross the Mediterranean to Europe since 2013. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. German Chancellor Angela Merkel told reporters on Friday that very serious differences remain in forming a grand coalition between her conservatives and the Social Democrats. SPD chief Martin Schulz agreed, saying Germany's top parties would need to negotiate health insurance and employment issues ahead of next week's deadline. The party said they would like to wrap up talks by Sunday. All 955 gold miners trapped in a South African mine due to a power cut have been rescued unharmed. The workers from the Beatrix mine in Free State Province were all brought to safe to the surface and underwent medical checkups after engineers restored power to the lifts. A mine spokesperson said there were no serious injuries reported. And finally in sports, Bundesliga football teams FC Cologne and Borussia Dortmund face off against each other later tonight at the Rhein Energy Stadium in Cologne, where middle-of-the-pack squad Dortmund look to gain ground without their star striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who signed with Arsenal on Wednesday. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you to all of you who are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
We begin the program in Burundi, where thousands of refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo have fled after a renewed outbreak of fighting between warring factions. The UNHCR says around 8,000 people fled over the border within just a few days. For many of them, the first point of arrival in Burundi was Rumonji, a city on the shores of Lake Tanganyika. Despite stretched capacity, aid workers praised locals for welcoming their neighbors. This report by Frederike Müller is now presented by Natalie Müller.
Rumonge wasn't prepared for the sudden influx of thousands of Congolese refugees crossing Lake Tanganyika, especially because most of its own people live as refugees in neighbouring Rwanda and elsewhere in the region. Soufian Ajali works with the UN's refugee agency in Burundi. He says the first few days were tricky, with local relief workers scrambling to move the refugees to transit centres where they would receive food and shelter.
There was no indication of what was happening on the other side of the border. Suddenly, people started arriving here across the lake in rowboats and small motorboats.
The UNHCR estimates that some 8,000 people entered the country within just a few days after fighting between government forces and rebels flared in eastern DRC. This man is one of them.
The Burundians help us. They bring us sweet potato and corn to eat. It's definitely better here than on the other side of the lake. I'm very grateful for the hospitality.
Many of the newcomers were taken to temporary shelters, family homes, public buildings and local schools. Gaspar Nibaruta, the headmaster at one such school, said it was a challenge housing so many people. Moving most of the refugees on from Rumonge helped ease the burden on the city, but Soufian Ajali with the UNHCR stressed that the residents deserved high praise for welcoming the newcomers. The UN agency describes the situation in the DRC as one of the world's worst crises, with an estimated 5 million Congolese currently displaced.
L'église, les communautés musulmanes.
The people, the churches and the Muslim community there really supported us and brought food to the newcomers, especially the children.
That report was by Frederike Müller, and many of you have been commenting on this particular story. Daniel says, sorry for them and congratulations to Burundians for their humanity.
Mba Ameji is asking, why can't the UN command the Kabila regime to step down? I'm beginning to perceive the UN as a toothless bulldog. And from my observation, the UN benefits from the violence in Africa and Asia.
And Zipporah, someone here by the name Simon Aubin from France says, it looks to me like the UN and its systems are more interested in keeping their jobs than serving humanity. Without refugees, UNHCR will have no job.
One last one, Didase from Rwanda says, I sympathize with those refugees. May God protect them. I also thank the Burundian government for the great act of welcoming those innocent victims of the war in DRC. And of course, now from there, we proceed on back here to Europe and of course to France, where at least 22 people were injured in Calais, France, late on Thursday after a fight broke out between two groups of migrants. Although the so-called Calais Jungle Migrant Camp was cleared in 2016, hundreds of migrants have remained behind, hoping to make it across the English Channel to the UK. DW's Elizabeth Schumacher has more.
Four migrants are in critical condition from gunshot wounds as police reinforcements arrived in the French port of Calais on Friday afternoon. The brawl between Afghan and Eritrean asylum seekers sent 22 people to the hospital. French officials said that the fight broke out as the migrants stood in line waiting for food handouts. It was not immediately clear who fired the shots. Police said they intervened to protect a group of Afghans from about 150 Eritreans. Interior Minister Gérard Collomb said that the government would craft a more comprehensive policy to address the massive number of migrants coming into France from Germany.
In Europe, for instance, in Germany, we have had in the last 3 years 300,000 migrants rejected for asylum, and they came here. It means that if we don't have the appropriate policy, we will not be able to resolve the problem.
Tensions have been high between different groups of refugees since the government demolished what locals called the Calais Jungle migrant camp in 2016. The name stems from the sprawling, unregulated nature of the camp. When French President Emmanuel Macron visited Calais 2 weeks ago, he swore that there would not be another jungle camp. Despite this, about 800 people have remained behind, hoping to catch a ride to the United Kingdom.
Elizabeth Schumacher with that report.
Now, trade between two East African economic giants, Kenya and Tanzania, has been marred by glitches and mistrust over non-compliance issues like quality and not adhering to cross-border trade rules. Despite the existence of non-tariff barriers to trade in the East African community, Kenya and Tanzania have traded instead counter-accusations of blocking each other's commodities. It is against that background that officials from both countries met in Kenya's coastal town of Mombasa to iron out their differences and resume good trade relations. Dana Wanyonyi was there and reports.
Trade relations between these two neighboring countries have been hit by a huge hitch to their economy and a blow to businessmen. Since April last year, trade restrictions were imposed between both countries after Kenya enforced a ban on the importation of cooking gas from Tanzania. This was in retaliation for Tanzania's ban on wheat flour imposed by Kenya, citing low quality standards. But the two have now agreed to put aside their trade differences, as explained by Kenya's Principal Secretary for Trade, Chris Kipto.
We are living here very happy, very united. I just want to tell the rest of people that the relationship between Tanzania and Kenya is excellent. Although we have seen that in the last 3 years, we have seen the total trade shrinking a bit. We've been able to resolve movement of wheat, for instance, movement of milk. At the moment, all those are now moving across the borders without any problem.
His Tanzanian counterpart, Professor Elisante Ole Gabriel, also, his country is ready to lift the non-tariff barriers to trade, adding that there is the need for the exchange of information between Kenya and Tanzania on trade matters.
The most important thing is to make sure that we have a good and conducive environment for business between Kenya and Tanzania. We intend to eliminate non-tariff barriers in business and taxes, and also have better plans for solving our challenges. It will be good to exchange information so as to ensure that businessmen from Kenya and Tanzania are not caught by surprise and are not in dilemma.
Kenneth Bagamohinda, Director General Customs and Trade at the East African Community, applauded both countries for solving their disputes amicably.
What is happening here, coming together to agree amicably, is a very big signal and symbol of good neighborliness between the two partners. And also another one is peaceful settlement of dispute.
It should be recalled that in November last year, Tanzanian authorities incinerated more than 6,000 day-old chicks from Kenya on suspicion they could spread bird flu. The same month, a Tanzanian court ordered the auctioneering of 1,300 cows belonging to Maasais from Kenya after they grazed beyond their borders.
Diana Mwanyanyi with that report from Mombasa. And as you've heard in that report, Tanzanian authorities auctioned off more than 1,000 cows belonging to Kenyan Maasai. And we threw back the question to you, how is this part affecting the East African community? Zipora, we have some comments that people have been, you know, sending in to our Facebook page.
Yes, people have various opinions. Victor Liners actually says he sees nothing serious about this dispute. He says they should settle their differences amicably.
And someone who calls herself or himself the Nash, she says, our leaders need to wake up and start focusing on more important things like access to water, electricity, healthcare, etc. This other stuff is really annoying. And Zipporah, you've been following, you know, trade between the two countries. I mean, what's going on? Yeah.
Yeah, I know that, of course, Kenya exports much and what it takes from Tanzania is actually very little. I think there's imbalance and you can tell that from the ground when you hear Tanzanians saying, oh, Kenyans are dominating. I think it's a case of
imbalances. It's about the volumes of goods that are crossing from Kenya, in other words, to Tanzania that perhaps the Tanzanians are not up about. Is that what you meant, yeah?
Yeah, that has to do with, that is part of the Zenith part.
Okay,
problem, yeah.
Then Charles Ongole John says, such a makings of war between countries. Uganda had its beef with Kenya over a rocky island in Lake Victoria not many years ago, too. This so-called East African Federation is only a name. It's not backed by goodwill, especially of its rulers. Many thanks for those comments. Keep them flowing, and we will read them whenever we can. In case you're just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. In the next 15 minutes, we've lined up, among other stories, a report on one of Africa's legends who pushed for Burundi's independence, Prince Louis Rwagasore.
Il avait la vision du Burundi indépendant.
He had a vision of an independent Burundi. He also had a vision for development, which is why he created the cooperatives. Because aside from coffee cultivation, Burundi was still a rural, undeveloped country.
And of course, as usual, we'll give you another dose of sports, the Bundesliga action this weekend, and the CHAN that is coming to close this weekend.
But before that, we go to Nigeria, where at least 21 people have died of Lassa fever in the last month. According to the Nigerian Center for Disease Control, it is one of the latest outbreaks, which has also left over 100 people infected. Cases have been reported in 13 of 36 states, while 10 healthcare workers have been affected, it added. It's not the first time there has been such an outbreak of the disease. More than 100 people were killed 2 years ago in Lagos and Abuja. So, why has it been so hard to tackle Lassa fever? A question I put to CEO of Nigeria's Center for Disease Control, Dr. Chikwe Ihekuanzu.
Lassa fever has been endemic in our country for many years. What has actually changed in the last 2 years is our ability to detect it. At NCDC and our collaborating labs across the country, over the last 2 years, we have strengthened our surveillance infrastructure, we've strengthened our laboratories, we've increased people's awareness on the need to use primary healthcare service. So in a way, what has really changed is our ability to detect an illness that we think has been there all along and has been affecting Nigerians for many years now.
Are you telling us that once you beefed up all these measures, that is why it's now being detected, but it's still killing people? Why is it killing people instead of preventing further occurrences of Lassa fever?
Well, Lassa fever is a viral hemorrhagic disease. It does have a lower case fatality ratio than things like Ebola, but you know it's a fairly bad disease. We have one medicine available, ribavirin, that is not very effective, especially when they don't come to hospitals very early. So we don't have too many tools in our arsenal, which is why it's very important that we mobilize the entire international community. It's not just a problem for Nigeria, but you know there's no magic bullet to Lassa. And I think it's really time to firstly raise this up the agenda internationally and really bring in the resources and expertise to support the country in addressing this disease.
You are in charge of disease control. What measures have you put in place to avoid future outbreaks of Lassa fever?
Since the onset of this outbreak, we've done a lot. We've been very busy. One is really educating the public and educating healthcare workers on the disease and on how to prevent it. We've used all the different media opportunities to educate people on how to prevent and what to do when they do suspect that they have a case. Secondly, we've been supporting all the states in Nigeria, especially those affected, with commodities such as PPE, i.e. personal protective equipment, ribavirin for treatment, and all the other commodities that they need in the hospitals to care for these patients. Thirdly, we've strengthened our surveillance system so that immediately a new case is identified, we're able to, as a system, respond quickly. There are responsibilities at the state and at the national level. We're really increasing the momentum and pushing our colleagues working in the international space. It's time to raise the bar on Lassa. It's time to invest more in the research that will take us to a vaccine, a research that will take us to new drugs, and to develop the tools. I call Lassa a neglected viral hemorrhagic fever. For a disease with a case fatality ratio of 20 to 30%, we have simply not invested enough in research. And this is not a problem for Nigeria alone.
That's the Chief Executive Officer of Nigeria's Center for Disease Control, Dr. Chikwe Ihekuanzu.
DW, African Roots.
Indeed, African roots. He was murdered a year before his country gained independence, yet Prince Louis Rwagasore was pivotal in Burundi's peaceful transition to an independent state. And although he was the son of the king, he agitated for democracy, becoming the country's first prime minister. A friend of African nationalists like Patrice Lumumba from Congo and Julius Nyerere from Tanzania, Rwagasore is a widely acclaimed hero in his country. This report by Tamara Vakenagel is now presented for Africa Link by Abubakar Jallo.
It's 1961 and Burundi is moving towards independence from Belgium at the same brisk paces as the beating of drums. The country has just held democratic elections in preparation for independence slated for 1962. Newly elected Prime Minister Louis Rwagasore looks ahead with confidence.
We want to prepare ourselves, take things into our hands. Without exaggeration, I think it will take 5 to 7 months. We want things to be good and to be well done.
But Rwagasore never experienced an independent Burundi. The 29-year-old was shot in the back and killed just weeks after his UPRONA party won a landslide victory. In Burundi, Rwagasore is seen as a real hero of the country's independence movement. Boyi Atanase, a former high-ranking UPRONA official, was 14 years old when he first saw Rwagasore.
It was on November 13, 1959. He was a handsome young man, very impressive, very charismatic. His charisma and his openness to the world enabled him to develop relationships with the greatest political leaders of the time, especially Julius Nyerere, Patrice Lumumba, and Kwame Nkrumah.
Rwagasore's charisma also enabled him to unite people beyond village politics, class and tribal affinities. His UPRONA party was a broad coalition, stresses Emily Moroha, a history professor at the University of Burundi. It sought to avoid the violence already evident at the time in neighboring Rwanda.
Rwagasore was successful in this because Burundi gained its independence almost without tensions. His party, UPRONA, was equally the party of the Hutus, the party of the Tutsis, and the party of the Ganwas.
But Louis Rwagasore also had many enemies, first and foremost among the colonial administration, which was infuriated because it hadn't been suspicious enough of this young student of royal blood. The Belgian authorities had even let him study in Brussels, where the encounter with students from all over the African continent was decisive. In 1956, Louis Rwagasore comes back to Bujumbura with a passion for economy and his head full of dreams of independence. Professor Murohoha talks of how, before Rwagasore even became prime minister, he pushed to establish local cooperatives to encourage economic independence.
Il avait la vision du Burundi indépendant.
He had a vision of an independent Burundi. He also had a vision for development, which is why he created the cooperatives. Because aside from coffee cultivation, Burundi was still a rural, undeveloped country. Rwagasore founded the cooperatives so that the Burundians could take part in the modern economy.
That is a change economic moderne.
These cooperatives failed, banned by the administration, and Louis Rwagasore's vision of a peaceful transition failed too. After his death, political rivalries and ethnic tensions led Burundi from one conflict to another. Yet, Rwagasore's myth is such that people in Burundi today often still ask what this country would be like if he had lived longer.
That report was by Tamara Vakenagel and presented by Africa Link's Abubakar Jallo. And of course, as usual on Friday, we have you another dose, or we give you another dose of the sports.
Yeah, and this time, Isaac, of course, it will be an action-packed weekend. Soccer fans are looking forward to the Africa Football Nations Championship, otherwise known as CHAN Final, which comes to a close this weekend, featuring host Morocco against Nigeria Super Eagles. Now, before we came on air, I was joined by Matthew Ford in the studio, and he tells us what to expect in this final match between the Super Eagles and Morocco's Lion of the Atlas.
Morocco
are the big favourites. They've made the final thanks mainly to their striker Ayoub El Kabi. He scored 8 goals in the tournament so far, including 2 in the semi-final. So Morocco are the favourites. However, the fans will be hoping for a repeat of the last time these two teams met, when Nigeria won 4-3. That was a fantastic game in 2014. So will we have a repeat of that spectacular game? I don't know. We'll see.
The main thing people have been asking is, why isn't the CHAN Championship really featuring so much?
I think it's a difficult question. I think in Africa itself, there's been a lot of publicity, a lot of attention on the tournament. And maybe that's to do with the specifications of the tournament, in that the teams are made up of players who are playing in those countries' leagues. So any African players who are playing abroad in the European leagues, for example, and as one example, Riyad Mahrez at Leicester City in England, for example, they are not eligible to play in the tournament. So some of the big African names are missing.
Okay, let's come back here to Germany and, of course, to the Bundesliga. We have interesting matches this weekend, and I think Friday's match between Cologne and Dortmund is what many are looking out for. We know that Aubameyang will not be there, and we have a new signing, Michy, who is supposed to take over his place. Do you think he can fit in the shoes of Aubameyang?
Oh yeah, Aubameyang has finally left Borussia Dortmund to join Arsenal. He's been replaced by a signing on loan from Chelsea, the Belgian striker Michy Batshuayi, who has scored a lot of goals in the past in Europe. He scored 33 goals in 78 performances for Marseille in France, and he scored 19 goals in 53 games for Chelsea. So, on paper, a perfect replacement for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and Dortmund fans will be hoping that he can have an immediate impact, because Dortmund need a win, and hopefully Michy Batshuayi can help them towards that in Cologne.
Which puts the coach Peter Stöger in a very hard situation.
It's going to be an emotional day for Peter Stöger, I think. He was in Cologne as head coach for 5 years. He became the longest serving coach ever at FC Cologne, and of course he led them not just back to the Bundesliga, but he also led them into the Europa League this season for the first time in 25 years.
So what do you think he can actually expect from the fans?
Having spoken to a lot of Cologne fans here in Germany, there was an acceptance that things weren't working in the first half of the season under Peter Stöger. However, it wasn't quite Peter Stöger's fault. There were a lot of mitigating factors at the club, including, for example, the departure of Anthony Modeste, the French striker, to China, and there were some other issues regarding the board and transfers as well. So it wasn't just Peter Stöger's fault, and I think the fans still see him as a hero.
I was talking to DW Sport editor Matthew Ford.
Now, one story that's making headlines is that the UNHCR has urged the government of Cameroon to ensure that the English-speaking Cameroonians who are deported from Nigeria are treated by human rights law and standards. Most of the individuals in question, according to UNHCR, had submitted asylum claims. Hence, their forcible return was in violation of the principle of non-refoulement. I think they're talking about, you know, the recently deported leaders, yes, of the Ambazonia. Yep. So we asked you on our Facebook page, DW Africa, will Paul Biya's government ensure that the Ambazonians get a fair trial? And you've sent in some reactions.
Yes, the reactions are many. Mark Chendengwa says even a newborn baby would not believe in a fair trial, as a French-controlled country does not respect its own laws, not to talk of international law and human rights.
He goes on to say the Ambazonian leaders are still held incommunicado for over a month now. And Wale Kunem says the worst situation about it is that the people of southern Cameroon have not even seen their images nor heard from the leaders since the 5th of February. Holding people incommunicado from family members and their legal personnel is unlawful. I think, Zipporah, we've been covering this story for quite some time and we keep checking on the developments, yeah?
Yes, and yeah, that is right. And people are very skeptical. Kibi says the UN will only talk without action. They have set conditions for Paul Biya and he has never respected any of them. What have they done to him?
Petrarchu Cedric says if they are tried at all, then the UNHCR has failed. They have to be forced back to Nigeria, or else the two governments involved should pay penalties for the injustice. On the social media platform, especially Twitter, people are wondering whether there is an existing extradition treaty between Nigeria and Cameroon. It seems both governments are not giving an answer to that effect.
Yes, Isaac, it seems it's not clear, and that's why people are questioning
if in case there will be fair trial. Gu Nelson says, fair trial or not, why were they abducted in the first place? The international conspiracy led by France and now Nigeria to continue to keep the people of Ambazonia in slavery.
And thank God it's Friday. On this note, we'd like to go to a well-deservedly weekend. On behalf of the team here, I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a splendid weekend ahead.